Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This segment's brought to you by NJ Diet. Visit njdiet.com or call 855-5-NJ-DIET.
Adam Hoge.
Ryan Pace is in year seven and hasn't solved the quarterback position, and there's some really, really, really good quarterbacks here, and you're in a tough spot at 20.
NBC Sports Chicago Bears insider.
I mean, this guy's toughness on a scale 1 to 10 is an 11.
And we saw what he was willing to give up for Russell Wilson. That was all real. That was a real effort. So I just put logic together, and I think absolutely there's a possibility they trade up.
Will they trade up?
With the 11th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, my Chicago Bears select Justin Fields, quarterback, Ohio State.
Adam Hoge with Bernstein and Rahimi on the score.
Pretty good. Must say, pretty good. Adam Hoge is on Twitter at Adam Hoge, the Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago, joins us now on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or at apnissan.com. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Now, in fairness, like most of the league, I did not expect them to be able to get Justin Fields at number 11. So good for them.
I want to mention, if you want to see Adam Hoge, you can. He has a ukulele behind him for some apparent reason. And he is on our Twitch feed, twitch.tv/Chicago670, the score. Let's deal with the news first. Matt Nagy, close contact, family member, has COVID. What do you know about the state of Bears vaccinations, Nagy included?
Yeah, so first of all, in terms of what's going on this weekend, it's just sort of some bad timing here, but he is a close contact to a family member who tested positive, which means he can't be around the team. Now, everything's already virtual in terms of meetings, and this is a different rookie mini camp than most years because they don't have a ton of bodies. I mean, usually you'd bring in a ton of tryout players and try to hold a full practice and be able to go 11 on 11, and they're not going to be able to do that because they're not going to have enough players. So what they're doing on the field is already more limited than in most years. And from what I understand, Nagy's still going to be able to participate virtually. So he's going to be able to watch what's going on live this weekend, communicate with the coaching staff, whether that's over the phone or over an iPad, I'm not really sure. But he's going to be able to see what's going on and communicate. So he's still kind of going to be there. He's not really missing much, I guess, is what the bottom line. He'll be able to watch all the film, whatever happens out there on the practice field, and I'll be out there. So we'll see what we get to see from Justin Fields this weekend. But that's what's going on with Nagy. And my understanding in terms of the vaccinations is that, like most of the world, it's sort of happening in pieces, whether we're talking about just people within the building at Halas Hall or talking about players, coaches, things like that. But I do know that they were being a little bit careful with the draft to maybe put the vaccinations off till the draft was over just to make sure if there's any side effects, things like that. People weren't missing time. It's just such an important time. And they're already sort of in their own bubble as it was preparing for the draft. So I believe that once the draft was over, they started that process. And so Nagy's kind of in the middle of getting vaccinated, probably between shot one and two, depending on what shots they're actually getting.
Yeah, that was the question we had, was what's the team's vaccination situation as a whole? And then had Nagy had one of his shots yet, potentially? So it sounds like that is somewhat cleared up as far as Nagy is concerned. Any clue on the rest of the team?
Yeah, I mean, with the players, it's sort of, I case-by-case basis. I mean, we had a chance to talk to Allen Robinson a couple weeks ago, and he said he was still doing his research on all of it. And then I think Darnell Mooney said that he was going to get vaccinated but hadn't happened yet. I guess I was a little bit surprised to learn that this stuff wasn't being expedited a little bit, but it probably also depends on who's actually in the building. Remember, I mean, we got some players that are there. Most all the meetings right now are virtual anyway, but there are some players in the building, whether they're rehabbing or lifting or things like that. They are allowed to do that. Well, if they're going to Hallis Hall, they can get access to whatever vaccinations are happening there. But if you're an Allen Robinson who hasn't been around the building right now because you got your own stuff going on with the contract, things like that, you got to get it done on your own. So I think it's – and this is probably going to be the case for most of the league.
Just get everybody shots. Get everybody. I thought the league said something. I thought they put out a statement saying to have full privileges, if everybody wants to actually come to work, everybody needs to get vaccinated. What are we doing here? This is easy. This is a private company that can say, and I know it's collectively bargained, but at some point you put some enforcements or at least some incentives in place to say if a team reaches a certain level of overall vaccination, they get to do this, this, and this and lead a normal life when others don't.
Well, and that sounds easy, but Dan, as you can tell what's going on in the world, for whatever reason, this is not as easy as it is to some of us. Like, just get the shots done as soon as they're available. I got mine. We're good to go. It feels like a sense of freedom. I feel better about life. And then logistically too, you got players all over the country. Some players are here and some aren't. And if they're not here, they can't walk into Hallis Hall and get their shot. So it's, unfortunately, it shouldn't be this complicated where we're talking about the Bears or the NFL or just in general in society, but obviously it has been.
Another thing that has been made a little more complicated than I think we initially realized is when Nagy talked about the idea of part of the reason Justin Fields needs to get acclimated to the NFL is the play calling process and the difference between how that was done at Ohio State at the line of scrimmage or in the huddles versus what it will be like in the NFL. This seems like a good time to where at least some evaluation can be done. I know it's going to be very, very, very scant based on the idea of what this is, but how much are you going to be keying in on that? What did you make of that comment, too?
Well, just you saying that is interesting because, the story we heard draft weekend was about Nagy talking about Mahomes' rookie minicamp where he's screaming in the huddle. And yes, it was like, dude, the defense can hear what you're saying. So I guess if there is a little nuance that Nagy might be missing because he's watching all this stuff over a computer screen this weekend, that could be one thing. It's just that sort of that cadence in the huddle. But you got your coaches there that are going to be standing right there and they know how to coach too. They'll be able to fit. Look, this is the least of my worries. What we're talking about here is sort of quarterback 101. And it's something that Justin Fields should have no problem with commanding the huddle, relaying the plays in the huddle. But it is important though. It is something that you have to master and have that one confidence, good communication, and then tempo. I mean, get in and out of the huddle so you can get the line of scrimmage and see the things that you need to process before the ball is snapped. But the big difference is I guess just the fact that Ohio State didn't really huddle and they would look to the sidelines to get their calls. But at this point, I mean, it's a very common thing in the NFL when these rookies are coming out. Almost every one of these quarterbacks is dealing with that. And it's on the list of things that they have to deal with in terms of processing defenses and the clock that goes off in your head once the ball is snapped. I'm not worried about this at all. This should be something that's probably mastered by the time training camp starts in July.
And if you're a good coach, it shouldn't be that big an issue, period. It's, you know, we watched on Hard Knocks. We watched Justin Herbert having the difficulties. Now, you know, Tyrod Taylor was spitting everything out right away in the huddle, and Herbert was struggling a little bit with it. And all that happened was Herbert went out and had an absolutely superior rookie year the moment they handed him the football and just to go through a touchdown passes. So I don't want it to be as hard as they want to make it. And if, in fact, Justin Fields has something that he finds more comfortable, do that because he's the guy. Now, we looked at the schedule. And I don't know how you look at a schedule generally and what it tells you or how it informs you. I want Justin Fields to start from jump. I'm also resigned to the fact that from everything we're hearing, it sounds unlikely that that's going to be the case. Did the schedule give you any indication of possible field starts here moments?
Well, first of all, I just want everyone to know that I know exactly what all these rosters will look like in September, October, November, and December. I know exactly who's going to get hurt and at what moment they're going to get hurt. And so all the predictions we make here are 100% accurate.
Okay, Gray Sports Almanac. Yes.
great reference. Look, these things are kind of intertwined because with the last question, because if we get to training camp and we do see that Justin Fields is struggling with some of that stuff, that there is a difference between when Andy Dalton gets in the huddle and with the ones, and then when Justin Fields gets in there with the twos, and it's just things are just not in sync, and you can see that. Okay, well then, I'm going to understand if Andy Dalton really is the starter week one, especially going up against a Rams defense that was really good. You got Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. I guess the good thing is they're running a similar scheme as the Bears, so a lot of what the Bears are going to practice in training camp when they face their own defense is going to be very similar to what they see in week one. And there's also that element of surprise in that whatever new wrinkles you bring in to the offense, you can spring that week one, no matter who's the quarterback. That could actually work to Justin Fields' advantage if he is indeed thrown in there right away, because they hadn't seen it at all. There's nothing on tape, even with the offense with Andy Dalton. So I think that there are some things that we're going to talk about as we get to that point. But one thing I do expect to see, and I think you would probably agree, I think it's going to be fairly obvious early on that Justin Fields is the most talented quarterback the Bears have.
It's already obvious
training
to
camp.
Me. Yeah. It's already a fact.
It is. So that's why I go back to the stuff we just talked about with the command and the huddle and just the operation of the offense, because that's different than just having the talent. You have to be able to do all those things cleanly. And if he's doing that cleanly, I'm not ruling out a week one start. I would also say that I would say it's more likely Dalton starts at this point, but it's still May. And if we see this click very quickly in training camp, I could see it happening. I could see Justin Fields starting pretty fast.
And this schedule is no joke when you take a look at it, given the opponents and who you're going to face and the quarterbacks that are on the other side of the field. What was your impression of what you saw? Just the glances as far as the difficulty overall of the opponents.
Well, one is what you just mentioned, all the quarterback matchups. It's a sexy schedule in that regard. However, those matchups look a lot better if it's Justin Fields facing Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields facing Kyler Murray or Joe Burrow, even in week two. But the other thing that stands out is there really aren't any, and I have a column up this morning on NBCSportsChicago.com about, you know, five different spots in the schedule where maybe it makes sense to start Justin Fields. There really aren't any obvious soft landing spots, though, because it's like, all right, you throw him out there against the 49ers in week eight. Well, then you got a Monday Night Football game against the Steelers right after that.
At Pittsburgh,
do you wait until after the bye week, which there's some logic there, right? You get a bye week, you can make that offensive transition. Well, 4 days later, you're playing on Thanksgiving. So you just threw a guy in against the Ravens, really good team, and you got to turn around and play on Thanksgiving just a few days later with no practice time. I don't know that that makes sense. So there's not a ton of obvious landing spots, and that's why, honestly, week one might be the most obvious for some of the reasons I just mentioned. I mean, you're going to have a ton of lead up. You're going to have some preseason games where Justin Fields is actually going to be on the field. You got the element of surprise working for you. And that's one of the games I mentioned as perhaps the most logical, as weird as that sounds. Just do it right away.
With you, talking with Adam Hoge, Bears insider, NBC Sports Chicago. How objectively do you think all of this is going to be set up? By that, I mean, I don't think there's ever been a quarterback competition that's ever genuinely been unbiased. There are inherent innate biases, even if they try as hard as they can to make it fair. They can choose who runs with the ones. They can choose who's going up against which defense. Do you believe, Nagy, when they say that they just want to have a process that produces the quarterback that is most likely to be the best guy for the job? Do you believe him? Do you think that's actually going to happen? Or is there a thumb on the scale for Andy Dalton?
All right, a couple things here. I think it's a great question, Dan. One is there's a human nature element to this. And as much as you and I and everybody else in this town wants to see Justin Fields play, they do too. This is their guy that they just spent months scouting, pulled off really with a heist, and they needed so many different things to go their way for it to happen, and it happened. So absolutely, from a human nature perspective, they want to get it right they're to play him. But they also need to get it right in that they, you know, that at least in Pace's side, he's already been through this once. This is a second chance he's getting with another quarterback. And so I do genuinely believe them when they say that they don't want to rush it. That being said, I also think Justin Fields is good enough that he's going to push the issue quicker than many think, because I just think he's going to be that good, and I think you're going to see it in camp. So in terms of how this plays out in camp, we can go back to last year, in which, in my opinion, really was a legitimate quarterback competition, where both players, Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles, got a fair shot.
But we didn't see any of it. That's the thing. It's not like we could be in Platteville and we could actually see it. We had to take their word for it on all of it.
But I was there, and I, every single day at camp, was writing these reports on what I was seeing. So I know you got to put a lot of trust in my eyes, and that's a scary thing to do.
That's why you're here.
But if you really go through and go back and read, and I'm not asking you to do this, but every single one of my quarterback reports during camp, like one day Nick, we literally had a graphic that we did with a meter where it pointed to Mitch one day, it pointed to Nick the next. It was kind of going back and forth. But at the end of the day, my conclusion was that Mitch was the winner. And there were reasons in terms of biases to say, and many people thought this, that Nick Foles was going to be the guy because that was the guy Matt Nagy wanted to bring in the offseason. But I do think Mitch won the competition, and he did end up starting. Now, it was a quick trigger, and they ended up making the change. But that is evidence to me that it will be a fair competition. And if at the end of the day, it really does look like Andy Dalton gives them the best chance to win in week one against the Rams because he's just more polished, or Fields is dealing with some things and just doesn't have command of the offense yet, then I think they'll do that. Let's not forget, this does come down to wins and losses. This is still a team that should be competitive this year. There is a pressure to win. And so I do think at the end of the day, they can say, which quarterback gives us the best chance of winning this game? And if it's in week one, it's Justin Fields, then I'm with you. Roll with Justin Fields. Maybe that's not till week three or four, but that's going to be the question that they continually ask. And I do think they will do it in a fair way.
And then also, we heard from Sean Desai. We played some of his audio earlier talking to the media. What were your takeaways from how you think the defense is going to look different this year?
Well, I think it's going to look different in some really good ways. And I think if you – Sean Desai has a very – I don't know how you guys – I feel like he's just very believable. Some of these coaches, they just say a lot of coachy things, right? And I don't know, Dan Campbell in Detroit right now. It's like, all right, kneecaps and all this. All right.
I said at 10 o'clock. I said I love smart coaches who don't sound like coaches.
Yes, I mean, Sean Desai just comes out. He has a PhD, but when you talk to him, you feel like you're talking to somebody who's legitimately smart and not trying to pull one over you. And so when he says, when he delivers that bite yesterday, that was a little bit of coachiness, where a little bit of fire and passion, right? Talking about what you're going to see with the defense. I believed it though, and I do think they're going to be a little bit more aggressive, and I do like what he's going to be able to bring to the unit, but schematically. I have some fears, though, about some of the other coaches they've lost, like Jay Rogers mm-hmm. on the defensive line. So I do have some concern about how there might be a feeling out point in September and how it all works out. So I don't know that's going to look dominant right away in week one, but I do think over the course of the season you're going to see more consistency and some more aggressiveness, and some of the things that we looked a little stale with Chuck Pagano at times last season will be corrected.
All right, I feel better. This is an uplifting Bears segment here that just things might just kind of work out. So I savor those moments. Adam Hoge, thank you as always. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
That is Adam Hoge, Bears insider, NBC Sports Chicago. When we return, a lot of people have been asking for thoughts on the situation with Northwestern Athletics, the fact that Mike Polisky has now resigned his position after being named to replace Jim Phillips as athletic director. And you'll hear those thoughts from both of us next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The inevitable happened for Northwestern, and it's the right outcome eventually. They screwed up, and they didn't recognize how badly they screwed up. They thought people perhaps either weren't paying attention or weren't going to have their voices heard. It was an arrogant move on the part of the Board of Trustees and Morton Shapiro, the president of the university, to install at best controversial hire, at worst worse than that. But let me just say something straight up. I don't know what happened. I can't speak to the facts of any of the actual civil cases involved or any of the accusations. I have no idea what happened or didn't happen. I know everything you know about what's been alleged. I also know that I worked for Mike Polisky when he was with the Chicago Rush, and I've been friendly with Mike for years. I've never had personally any problems with Mike. I always thought he was a terrific guy who had a great reputation. And, of course, my friendship with Jim Phillips informed a lot of that as well. However, this was a no-brainer. This was a mistake. And the lack of understanding of how it makes an institution of higher learning look when you're essentially picking sides against some of your own students and against women who are speaking up about mistreatment. And if, in fact, whatever happened or may have happened, the allegations are real, they are in court, they are in documents, and you shouldn't have done this. You just shouldn't have done it. And it's the right thing to do to undo it.
He's named in the lawsuit because the accuser said that he was dismissing the story and that there was also claims of an accusation of falsifying evidence. And it's just bad optics. So he stepped down saying he didn't want to be a distraction. And I think it's never a bad time to fix a mistake. So if that's what he thinks is fixing the mistake, then so be it.
I'm just very surprised that an organization, an institution, I should say, as established, as intelligent, as well-funded as Northwestern would do something like this so blindly unaware of what the reaction could be, would be, and frankly should be. And to take the wrong side in this and to not understand that they were taking the wrong side of the arrogance with which this was done. And I know he was the successor. This was going to be his entire career was waiting in the wings for when Jim Phillips left, that he would ascend to the top job. However, plans change. And legal cases and a changing environment and a changing understanding for empowering women or listening and believing that things are different now. And institutions of higher learning have been on the forefront of this, not on the wrong side of it. And this was a case where Northwestern chose to be on the wrong side, and it's disappointing.
It's also, there's a couple of other pieces of this that I think are notable. Tribune did a nice job with the story. And here's one paragraph that I would like to take out of it. Black cheerleaders said in reports they told Polisky of the team's racially discriminatory policies, including a contract that included a ban on braids, and he did not respond to their satisfaction. Why is this still a thing? This should be something simple to rectify.
I didn't see that detail. Yeah, that's again, wrong side.
And then also, a group of professors called Women Faculty for a Better NU released a statement hours after his resignation calling for an independent third-party investigation into the university's Office of Equity and the athletic department, specifically an investigation into the complaints of racism by black cheerleaders.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Is this Shannon Ryan's piece, by the way? Would
yes.
you say the Tribune? I want to make sure we mention her name. That
yes.
she does a particularly good job, not just with the facts of some of this, but with the tone.
Shannon Ryan and Alyssa Cherney. together. And yes, that story is worth your time when it comes to this discussion.
We see the power of the money that drives these sports, particularly football and basketball. And they've got plenty to work out regarding the basketball program, which is another story altogether right here with what's going on with that. But that's not the story for today. But this is a case where, you know, not interrupting some of these golden geese, perhaps, and a lot of these donor relationships and a lot of the old guard stuff was taking precedence over listening to people, being aware of people, and being sensitive to what people were saying about how they think your university should represent everybody and not just the moneyed interests.
And I don't think it's any short. I don't think we can belittle what it takes for a group of cheerleaders who I think, even though technically they're still adults when you're in college, to be that young and to have to put something at the forefront of people like this, talking about something that to me is pretty basic.
It's the message that it sends, having gone through the experience as a parent and trying to ask difficult questions about colleges and how do they listen to women? You know, there are mothers and fathers of daughters specifically who want to know not just about actual like safety stats and that kind of thing and how well lit some of the areas are, but big moments like this, the big moments like this and what actually matters. Universities can tell you how they feel about these things. And anytime sports is involved, the balance is upset. And it's usually upset in the direction of money. And it's off-putting as a parent when you look at these things. And you try to say, how safe is my daughter going to be in general? How much do they care? They tell you in a lot of these decisions how much they care.
Well, and then there's the flip side of that when accusations indicate that it might be a willing participant and complicit on the part of the
correct
institution. That's not a lack of institutional control at that point. That is something very different. And we'll see how the details shake out. But when it came to this scenario and what happened, bad optics resulted in something that should have probably occurred.
Looking back on it, you wonder how they could possibly have not seen this happening.
Well, if you choose not to listen, it's pretty easy, I guess.
I was wondering, the moment I saw all the names involved and I saw the names of the finalists and they were trying to be transparent about to whom they were talking, and they forged ahead with this and tried to ram this through and maybe thought people wouldn't notice or wouldn't care or wouldn't say anything or they would wait for it to die down. It was a complete miscalculation. But I think you're right when you say there's never a bad time to undo a mistake.
That's true. Has to be. Or else nobody would fix any mistakes ever. And if he's saying that this was as well, then there's some justice there in that move. But also, there's going to be punishment now for people who dismiss people who are trying to speak up about these things. And that's what that is.
And if they want to do further investigations, if this is uncovering other places where it may lead, go ahead. Let's do it. Like there's no bad time to do that either.
Agreed. Yeah, the best time is always now, right? Or they always say what the adage is, the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago and the second best time is today.
I've never heard that before.
Works in this scenario.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that. When we come back, we will do our 71 seconds of hockey talk. Just a reset on what's being said about Jonathan Toews and his current condition and about what we know and what we don't. We'll get Jay Zawoski's thoughts on that because we had some people talking about that as we speculate toward next season and perhaps beyond. That's straight ahead on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
I think it's just pretty incredible if you do want to zoom out and look at it big picture with all the things that have happened to the White Sox, where they still are. It really is a testament to how talented the team is, how bad the division is. Like mm-hmm. That's part of it.
Which is why they can survive and win their division, even with their manager costing them 2 or 3 games every 30.
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, an Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Well, look, it's an assumption that Jonathan Toews is done for this regular season with the Chicago Blackhawks. Nobody close to Jonathan Toews is saying that definitively, other than say he's very likely done for this season. But with fewer than 10 games remaining in the Hawks' regular season, it seems very likely. The good news, of course, nobody is being specific to what's gone on with Jonathan Toews. The good news is that his health is getting better. He's seen improvement over the months. And the expectation is that as long as he stays headed in the right direction, the direction that he's on right now, that he should be healthy and ready to return to the Chicago Blackhawks next season. Now, it has been a very challenging year for the captain of the Chicago Blackhawks, and by extension with his absence, it's been equally challenging for the Hawks in general.
That was Darren Dreger of the Sports Network in Canada via NBC Sports Network talking about Jonathan Toews. And we just sort of collect these little data points to help us triangulate where he is and how he is. Everyone just wants him to be okay. By the way, Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 to noon on The Score. I'm Dan. She's Layla.
Hi.
Hello. Hey, how's it going? So now we actually heard from the general manager of the team, Stan Bowman, and listen to the phrase that he uses here when discussing Toews and his future.
I talked to Jonathan a couple of weeks ago. He's doing well. Had a good chat. We talked for about 15, 20 minutes about a lot of things, you know, our team, but just non-hockey stuff too. So it was good to connect with him and catch up. I think that's the update that I have though, John. I don't have anything more than that. We're hopeful he'll be back, but we're just going to let it play out and we'll see. It's a bit of uncharted waters here. You know, this situation came up and we're just kind of taking as it comes. So, you know, when we have more information, we'll pass that along.
Uncharted waters. So then the follow-up, what's uncharted about it?
What is that? That was my question too. That's what we're left with. And it's not like we've had situations in the past that we've had come up that are, I would say, very isolated problems. Like what forced Marian Hossa to end his career, for example?
No, it was an allergy to the jersey.
I would say that is uncharted waters. Would you not?
Except for back in the 80s when it was a larger problem, that when it was sort of an epidemic in the league of guys who developed jersey allergies.
Right, but it's not something you hear every day. So when he says this, that gave me pause.
I have another question too, and I don't know if this has been at Jay Zawoski. Maybe you know the answer. Is he currently under the primary care of Blackhawks-affiliated doctors, or is he with his own doctors?
I don't even know if he's in Chicago. He might be in Canada. I know nothing about the situation, and I'm not alone. That's pretty much everybody I talk to that usually has stuff for me, to put it in such a term. Has nothing.
Well, I wonder if there's any medical disagreement here. It's sort of in a situation where, remember we went through this with Elena Deladon and the Sky, and about not all doctors agree there is such a thing as chronic Lyme disease. And that has been her issue, and she found her doctor in Delaware that did recognize a specific syndrome that much of mainstream medicine did and does not.
Correct.
And there are some gray areas there. There are some accepted treatments, mainstream accepted treatments that are considered experimental or are considered unsanctioned elsewhere. And that's why I'm wondering if this has anything to do with what's going on now. I don't know the answer to that. I'm just asking.
It's just such a strange situation. And it feels like Stan left the door open to ask again, ask another question. And I wasn't there. I could have been there and I wasn't there. So I can point the thumb at myself for not being there too. And it is a very sensitive situation, but uncharted waters sounds like ask me another question. I don't know. I don't know if Stan's going to say anything or give anything away, but even the question of, is it physical? Is it mental? What are we dealing with here? I know you can't get specific. I know patient privacy, but it sounds less optimistic today than it did when we heard that cut from Darren Dreger a couple weeks ago.
That is the exact point here. Is that Dreger made it sound like we might have something happening. He gave some sort of timeline. There was some sort of as concrete as you can get information, and this pulls that back.
Yeah, the expectation is that he'll play next year, is what Dreger said, and then uncharted waters is what we heard yesterday.
It's also passive voice. The expectation is, he doesn't put a name on it. He doesn't say the Blackhawks expect or Taves expects. When you make it that broad and passive, the expectation is you soften the certainty.
630 says that everybody can be concerned and hope that Taves is okay, but it's absolutely nobody's business what is specifically going on with him. Nobody's
Agreed.
Asking to know what is specifically going on. We're just trying to figure out if there's any sort of timeline, if there's any sort of expectation. Is he actually okay?
Right, and what level of concern to have, yes. Like what can be ruled out when you have everything on the table like this? Because you get fearful that it can be certain things.
I think we've gotten used to not having him on the ice. I'm not clamoring for him to come back as a fan. That would be great.
clamoring for him to come back.
But you know what I'm trying to say.
Of course, yes.
Like, we're all moving forward with the idea that this is the new normal. But people care about him, too.
That's the thing, is most of the people I've seen, and of course there's always exceptions, but most people are just concerned and want to know, is he okay? It's not even about the hockey. Is Jonathan Taves okay, and is he going to be okay?
Yeah, the amazing thing is, we're talking about one of the all-time great Chicago professional athletes. This isn't just some dude. When you say, well, we're not obligated. Could you imagine if this were Scottie Pippen?
Also, to quell the rumors.
That's the thing. The rumors are out of control.
You have to. This is 2021, man. You can't just be quiet and expect that people are just going to go along with it. People talk. And you have to get out in front of certain narratives before they start controlling you. Sometimes silence is not the best policy here. It doesn't mean people are going to like your answer. But it does help quell rumors. It just does. Especially when some of the diagnoses that we're seeing, and I think it's not malicious. I think it's people just scatter shooting, trying to figure it out on their own. But it becomes a snowball.
Connecting dots and saying, well, if he's got fatigue and it's this, then my sick uncle had this and he had this disease. And then it spreads like wildfire, and then that becomes, air quotes, fact. Like a lot of things we've seen with the Hawks over the years, because they keep things so secretive. And again, I understand why they're doing it. And their right to protect his privacy. I'm not questioning that. It's just a little more, like, we're confident he'll be okay. He just needs some time before he's ready to come back.
Right.
Because, even that would be okay.
Because otherwise it turns into this uncontrolled rumor mill that just goes out of control. And when you're talking about somebody's health, people don't necessarily have the same care about these discussions that, say, you or I do, because we have media training, or others who might. It's just this unregulated wildfire that goes about.
And the other thing with that is people who are consuming social media, as we've learned over the last 4.5 years or so, don't know how to differentiate facts from some dude saying it on social media.
But it's also human nature. To me, it's human nature to say, oh, there's something wrong with me and I don't know what it is. And then your friends are going to say, well, here, I had this happen, or I know somebody who had this happen. And that's normal.
But I'm saying, like, I read on Twitter, I saw a guy on Twitter say it was this. So that's what it is. And then that's when things get out of control.
We will do transition with Mark Grody, who's in for the vacationing Lawrence Holmes, next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.